Hello and what is shaking, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today we are getting geeky with our fourth edition of the wine additive conversation that we've been having on the show, something that has been very, very popular to discuss over the last almost year and a half here on the Wind Up Podcast, and we are going to get into it even further today, and very excited to give you all a little bit more insight into some of the things that can go into wine and what kind of these tools are for winemakers. Before we do that, a couple of quick announcements as usual. Thank you as always for liking, sharing, subscribing to the show, downloading it through whatever service you get your podcasts. Please remember to rate and review the show. Definitely helps out with the algorithm, getting it out and about for more eyeballs and more ears to listen to it. We also be sure to, we also have plenty of other updates going through our social networks, YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, the social network formerly known as Twitter. You can find us at MTGA Wines, where we're posting more regular updates about what's going on around the winery in Napa, things that are just going on if you want to be a little bit more in touch and in tune with how wine is made and how we go about our business out here. We'll try not to humbly brag about the great wines that we're consuming and great meals we're eating, but that's what Instagram's for, right? So there might be a little bit of that. YouTube, especially if you subscribe to our YouTube channel, you can find all kinds of tasting notes, more information. You can also find the video version of this podcast if you happen to be listening to it. Our YouTube channel is a great way to see what's actually going on. You can see me dance around here in my home studio and office. Last but not least, be sure to check out our website, mtjwines.com. You can check out more information on our wine, sign up for our newsletter, wine club, all kinds of good stuff. You can also scroll down to the bottom of our homepage there, and that's, again, mtjwines.com. And through a little email form there, you can submit questions for our monthly Q&A. We will have another one to round out the month of August, just like the one we did last week to round out the end of July, where we try and answer as many of your questions as we can here on the show as intelligently or sarcastically as I possibly can. All right, today's episode is a fun one. For those that are just listening, I will do my best to explain kind of what we have going on in front of us. There's not a whole lot of show and tell, but we've talked a lot about these additives and things that can go into wine, and the tools that us winemakers have at our disposal, and specifically the companies that provide these tools. And today we're getting into one of them. This is the 2024 catalog for Lefort. This is a company that we actually purchase some of our yeast from, which is why we wanted to highlight them, because they're a company we actually work with. Now, you might notice that this is a pretty decently sized catalog. It's like a thick magazine, I suppose. I'm going to show you right now that we have 1, 2, 3 pages here. Basically the first, like, you know, few pages of the booklet here, very thin, just a few sections of it. And then on the other side, we have all kinds of stuff to get into. The smaller section that I highlighted here are the things that we actually utilize in the form of the yeast that we use for our fermentations. Everything else in this magazine, which is, how many pages is this thing? It's almost 100 pages long. We use about, you know, a page and a half of stuff, and which are basically three different yeast strains that we purchase from them. Everything else is like extraneous, just stuff we're going to talk about, because it's all everything from the yeast that we use, different yeast nutrients. We're going to talk about malolactic bacteria. We're going to talk about enzymes. We're going to talk about fining agents. We're going to talk about tannin and stabilization. There's all kinds of stuff in here. So when I say, and I've said this many a time on the show, that there's literally hundreds of different things at our disposal to make wine, this is what I'm talking about. And you might be like us. You might only use 2 or 3 of them. You might be someone who uses this entire handbook. Actually, probably not, but you might use a lot of the things in this here handbook because you're trying to create and really manufacture a wine rather than, say, craft it, like some of us. I'm going to do the best I can to explain some of this. I want you to keep in mind that my winemaking experience is very, very practical. I do not have a degree in science. I do not have a degree in winemaking. I know enough about it to be dangerous. And with that in mind, I'm going to speak about this in a fairly casual manner. I am certainly going to give you my opinion of things, and they'll certainly be my honest opinion on things, because there are plenty of items in this catalog that I'm not afraid of, right? They're perfectly fine products. If people decide to use them in their winemaking, realistically, that doesn't bother me. Now, the caveat is that I probably wouldn't. In fact, I don't. But I guess it's cool to have the option, especially if it's not an offensive thing. That's something synthetic or GMO or whatever the case may be. But again, this is more of a style. That's more of a stylistic consideration. Now, there are certainly things when it comes to winemaking that I will never use. Just verboten, not allowed. I have dug a very deep line in the sand among certain substances that I will never use in my winemaking. Most of them being synthetic. Something like PVPP, which is a acronym for a very long polyvinyl polyrhenidone substance. I always mess up the name. I can never pronounce it right, which is why I always mumble the end of it like I'm speaking French. It's not French. It's just a chemical name. Or you also have things like dimethyl dicarbonate, stuff that I would just never use in my winemaking. There are also other additives like oak chips and sawdust and tannin powders and all kinds of other stuff where I'm like, you know what? Realistically, those are things that are naturally occurring. I know you're just extracting them and processing them so they can be added back in certain volumes to like hit certain numbers and levels. Oak chips are also a lot cheaper than buying brand new oak barrels. So you know what? If you're trying to make a, you know, $5.99, $19.99, whatever bottle of wine, sure, have at it. Would I do that? Absolutely not. Does it bother me? Not really, but to each their own, I guess. Some of the stuff in here is certainly geared towards that kind of large scale, like manufacturing. Like, here's how you dial these things in to make sure that you're making, in essence, the same wine year in and year out. It's more of a manufacturing side of things rather than it's like a craft, like brewery side of things, where it's like, yeah, there's a little bit of a give and take, and batches tend to be different, and so on and so forth, and such as whatnot. So let's dive into this catalog, shall we? I'm not exactly sure. I'm going to try and stay within our normal like 35 to 45 minute range, but there's a lot of ground to cover today. If we have to break this up into two parts, we just might. But we're going to start kind of on the easier and the lighter side of things, and then I'll try and overly complicate this as much as I possibly can. So hold on to your butts. Now, those first couple of pages, as we open it up here, go right into different yeast selections. These yeast selections are what we use for our alcoholic fermentation. That's taking the nice sugar that's in the grapes and in the must and in the juice, and it's fermenting it. It converts it to alcohol, carbon dioxide. It exudes some heat as well over the course of that process. You also have a lot of different compounds being created in the form of esters and thiols that create a lot of the flavors, aromas, and kind of structural components of a wine. The yeast is something that we purchase and we use because we want to make sure that our fermentations finish efficiently. There's a lot of natural yeast that can be found out just in occurring in the vineyards, but on occasion, maybe one of out of 100 yeast cells on a grape cluster, or you know, that you can find in and around grape clusters, are actually viable and something that's going to give you the flavors and characteristics that you want. So for those that are interested in natural fermentations and the natural wine movement, you better have a really healthy yeast kind of culture out in that vineyard to be able to achieve that. Believe me, I've worked with vineyards that don't have that, and doing a natural fermentation goes dreadfully awry very, very quickly. And frankly, a lot of them do, but that's natural winemaking in a nutshell. Those of you who know my opinions on natural winemaking know what I'm talking about. Using something that is simply propagated and bred in a lab is not something that bothers me. This is not a GMO product. This is not something that is built synthetically to create certain flavors or characteristics. These were naturally occurring yeasts that have been out in you know, out in vineyards that were extracted from those vineyards and then propagated in a lab setting so that we can actually utilize them in volume rather than hoping that they're just readily available on the grapes that we're picking. That's kind of the long and short of it. It's going to take a lot for somebody to convince me otherwise. Now, I'm sure there are certain things in here that are GMO. There are certain things in, that we'll talk about that are, you know, synthetic. The yeast is not where we're having that conversation. Maybe some of the GMO stuff here and there, but even for us, we don't use any GMO yeast. So there you go. There you have it. So from here, you have all kinds of options. You know, this is a handful of different pages that you have here for your red wines, for whites and rosés. And this is just one company. Keep in mind, there are many, many companies producing these things for us. They all have their own benefits. Certain winemakers like certain companies. I'm a big fan of these guys. They make pretty good, high-quality stuff. They make yeasts that are very, very reliable, that don't create a lot of issues, that make the high-quality wines that we're known for. So a lot of this winemaking side of thing and finding catalogs or sorting through catalogs like this or tracking down a company you want to use comes with some trial and error, getting to know those people, getting to know those products, and really trusting that they're good at what they do. Luckily, the gal Anna, who actually did a lot of the introductions to this section and does a lot of the research for them, she's a lovely PhD, like, you know, amazingly talented gal who works primarily in their offices and laboratories in France. We were at a conference with her, a little seminar with her not that long ago, talking about a couple of these yeast selections that we're looking at right here. Fascinating stuff, very, very nerdy. I'm not going to get too far into that, but they talked about some of their newer yeast strains that they've been coming out with and that have been shown to have great potential. To take this kind of one step further as far as the yeast conversation goes, because technically it is an additive. This is something that we are adding to our juice and to the grape must to get that fermentation going. It is probably the most common additive in winemaking because it is something that basically everybody uses, except for a handful of the natural wine producers that are actually good at what they do and the vast majority of them that are terrible at winemaking when it's all said and done. But them is the ropes. And this is something that realistically, I think we can all agree, you have yeast. It's almost like creating a sourdough starter. You got to get it going to actually get it going from time to time. Every once in a while, even if you're relying on a natural fermentation to happen, there occasionally it gets stuck and it never finishes the job that it's set out to do. And you end up with this like off dry, kind of sweet, kind of not funky wine. And you run into all kinds of chemistry problems as a result. So relying on something like a yeast culture to get this thing, get that fermentation rocking and rolling for you, my humble opinion, is no harm, no foul. You're simply just doing the best you can with what you got. And sometimes, frankly, winemaking does need a little bit of a jumpstart to make sure you don't make vinegar. That's all I got to say about that. Now, as we go through this, you know, you've got options for red wines, you got options for whites and rosés. There are just loads and loads of different yeast that we can use. And as you go further through this catalog, you will actually see like different characteristics and tables and things that, you know, basically tell you like, hey, here are the varieties that these yeasts were in essence found in and around. Here's what these yeasts typically like. And if you're trying to make a certain style of wine, here's this yeast from, you know, this type of yeast that is going to lean that direction. It's very similar to, say, clones of different grapes. For those that aren't aware, like even within like Cabernet Sauvignon or Pinot Noir, you have different types of Cabernet Sauvignon or Pinot Noir. And like Pinot Noir is a great example because of Burgundy. A lot of those clones are named after the towns. You have the Pommard clone, for example. Some of them are just numbers like the 115 clone or 667 clone. Each one of those clonal selections have their own different flavors and characteristics and kind of structure that goes about them. And these yeasts are really no different. They evolved naturally in vineyards around the world. They lean towards certain flavors and characteristics. It's not as though they were engineered to do that. It's not some sort of synthetic process that's injecting flavors into the wine, as some might have you believe. It's just how they evolved. And they elicit certain thiols and esters, which are the compounds that make up a lot of the flavors and structural components of a wine. Some of them will create more or less of certain kind of categories of those to say maybe make your wine smell more like grapefruit or more like lemon or more like black currant versus black cherry. It's almost like different types of apples. You have your Fuji, Red Delicious, Granny Smith. They are all apples, but they have different flavors and characteristics about them. Turns out yeast is very, very similar and can add a lot of different flavors and complexity to your wine just naturally because certain yeasts are better at doing certain things than others. So it can be, this is a total, you know, rabbit hole to dive down in terms of like what yeast you want to use, you know, what style of wine you're trying to create will sometimes dictate that. And you'll have to figure out, hey, we're trying to make something that is, you know, maybe a little bit more structured and intense. Maybe you're going to use the F15 yeast in here like we do. We use that for our Cabernet and for a little bit of our Merlot because it definitely adds more phenolic character. You know, the tannins are really highlighted. It helps maintain that, and it still has these kind of nice darker fruit characteristics where you have other things in here that focus more on kind of like brighter, more plush fruits, things of that nature. So you can kind of cherry pick some of this to really lean stylistically into what you're doing without having to do anything synthetic or use any other like flavoring additives or powders or concentrates and things of that nature. So you can kind of keep it simple, stupid, by just picking out a good yeast that's going to get the job done and really lean into the style of wine that you're going to use. Now, something else that is fairly common in these fermentation processes are different nutrients. So we're going to dive into that section next. Starting right now, as at this point of the episode, everything I talk about from this point on, we use basically very little of, if anything at all. We do use some yeast nutrients, and that's what we're going to talk about. These are in essence like multivitamins for your fermentation. It is a very, in particular, you know, you have these regular fermentation processes that are occurring. To keep them healthy, you need to keep the yeast healthy. They have to, the cell walls need to be intact. They need to be somewhat resistant to alcohol and acids because those are naturally occurring in the winemaking process. And you want them to make sure that the yeast kind of finishes this fermentation to make sure you don't end up with that sickly sweet kind of funky wine that I mentioned earlier. A big compound or a big nutrient for yeast is nitrogen. Typically, there's kind of a range that we can actually measure in a lab that tells us, hey, how much nitrogen is in essence readily available for yeast to uptake and use as a nutrient through its fermentation process. And there is, within a certain range, a kind of a number that you shoot for to make sure that your fermentation actually goes off without a hitch. We're very lucky that it's rare that we have to use any nutrients to kind of give the yeast that own jumpstart and make sure they stay healthy, because typically in the vineyards that we work with, there's actually plenty of nitrogen. There are plenty of nutrients for these yeast to continue moving forward. This is some of the science that we do use, is to make sure like, hey, you know, the vineyard that we're using has this readily available. And that number will change from the vineyard kind of year in and year out. But typically once we've used, you know, a vineyard a few times, we get to know the site, and maybe it's a site that we don't use any nutrients for and or never have over the course of a few years. We just don't worry about measuring it. In fact, at this stage, it's rare that I ever end up measuring that nitrogen component because most of our vineyards go off without a hitch. There are a couple with lower nitrogen numbers that we do use a little bit of this, in essence, multivitamin for the yeast to make sure that they stay healthy and actually get the job done. You can almost equate it to waking up and, you know, taking your own, you know, multivitamin every morning, making sure that, you know, throughout the day, you're actually getting the vitamins and minerals that you need versus being, you know, depleted or deficient in any of them. This is the same idea that we use for the yeast. Some will argue again that this is taking it a step too far. But again, you're talking about using things that are typically naturally occurring, and you're just making sure that the yeast stay healthy. You're not adding anything synthetic to ensure that the fermentation goes off without a hitch. You're just making sure that your yeast stay healthy and that your fermentation's going to go well. You can see right here that, boom, for those that are following along, I don't even know if I can show this on the screen. It might pop up or not. But you can see that some of this contains just organic nitrogen, stuff that's going to actually just give you, hey, here's the stuff that the yeast naturally wants, and here it is in its kind of raw form. There you go. Plain, simple, easy to go. You do have all kinds of other sources of nitrogen as well that you can utilize. And believe me, labs like Lafort and places like Lafort, they have all kinds of products that you can use to kind of doctor that up and make sure that you're hitting the numbers you need to, or at the very least, you know, make sure that your fermentation is going to go off without a hitch. At this stage, I'm really not too worried about those products. They're not things that bother me. This is not something that, you know, it creates issues or any adverse, you know, health effects on the, you know, consumer side of things. These are just the natural and healthy part of creating an environment in which good wine can be made and realistic, stable wine can be made. It's as simple as that. Like those two things alone, you're probably going to be just fine. You know, you don't even at this stage, you know, there are still people that maybe, you know, make sure like ourselves, add a low dose of sulfites to make sure their wines stay stable and preserved a little bit more. They don't oxidize, they don't start to spoil and turn to vinegar. And there are folks that would argue like, hey, that's taking it a step too far. There are people that argue that using this yeast and using these nutrients is taking it a step too far. I'm in disagreement with them because those natural wines typically have compounds in them that actually lead towards more headaches, literally, and more issues than doing what is kind of considered a conventional style of winemaking like we're talking about here today. Beyond that, you have all kinds of other yeast products. I'm not going to bore you too much with some of these details. You're talking about everything from, you know, creating more antioxidants to, you know, reducing, you know, the power of certain yeasts, you know, maintaining the cell walls and certain contents within. I mean, it's stuff that frankly goes over my head scientifically. It's interesting, but realistic, you know, stuff that I frankly, it's like, it doesn't bother me, but I'm like, I'm never going to use it. So I'm just not going to bother, quite frankly. A section of this catalog that I find super interesting, and the next one we're going to dive into, are enzymes. These are things that are naturally occurring in these grapes and in the must that we are, you know, harvesting and crushing and preparing for winemaking. Now, a lot of these enzymes will do all kinds of different things. Some of them are going to help with higher yields when you're pressing a wine. Some of them are going to, you know, reduce the maceration duration so you don't have to necessarily keep, you know, this juice on the skins and things as long as you might have to. Some will help clarify the wine so you don't have as much, you know, heavy solids and sediment kind of caught up in solution, so you have a nice, clear, crisp looking wine. Others will help aromatic expression and flavor expression, where some of those thiols and esters are kind of extracted at a higher rate, and it allows you to create these really complex, really intense wines because basically it's creating more efficiency within some of these processes. Within this, and this was one of the seminars that we actually went to, was talking a lot about these enzymes, and it's fascinating stuff. It really, really is. These are one of those things where if someone's using these in their winemaking, honestly, it doesn't bother me. I would say this is more of a stylistic consideration. A lot of these are things that are naturally occurring. You're simply just adding them in greater volume to get more extraction in some way, shape, or form and dial in a specific kind of flavor profile, aromatic profile, structure, clarity, all the things that we just mentioned. Are these things that I use in my winemaking? No, but again, they don't bother me. This is something that I find very, very fascinating when it comes to kind of the science of winemaking versus the art, or kind of dialing in things like this. I hold myself to kind of this weird purist mentality of like, I like just using what the grapes give me. I don't want to try and doctor them up any more than I have to. This seems like too much like hard work. It's not because I'm lazy, but I like providing, you know, wines that are as hands-off and less processed. This isn't really heavy processing. It's not like you're like synthetically adding things necessarily. You're just enhancing what's already naturally occurring in the grapes. like, this is a gray area for me. I'm not going to use this stuff. I'm sure there are plenty of people I know that have. Am I going to hold it against them? No. Stylistically, you do you, bae. I really don't care. But this just isn't my bag. You know what I mean? Some of these are very, very interesting. And some of the charts and kind of the studies that they've done with control samples with these enzymes added versus wines that haven't had them added, you see these clear spikes where it's like, oh yeah, this is showing that this enzyme is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing in terms of, you know, bringing out aromas in certain grape varieties and so on. You're seeing it, you know, actually clarify juice, and you're getting more extraction and higher yields from your pressing cycle. Like, that's all pretty cool stuff. But again, not necessarily something that I worry about, you know. But again, no harm, no foul. Very, very interesting stuff. I feel as though these, you know, the enzyme side of things is just, it's so cool. It's fascinating stuff. But man, it's just not something that I want to dip my toe into. Like, I'll hang out by the pool with these folks. I'm probably just not going to jump in. You know what I mean? Now, what's really interesting as we go kind of like further into this is we get to things like finding agents. Now, finding agents, there's all kinds of different stuff. And this is really, really cool because I'll kind of show you this here as well, is that, you know, you have things that are, you can see the marker, maybe if you're watching right up here, for those that are just listening, you know, these are where you get into some of like the certified like vegan products. We're like, okay, well, realistically, I'm not vegan. I eat plenty of meat, and there are plenty of you that I'm sure do as well. Maybe there's some of you that are vegan out there. But this is the kind of stuff where it's like, hey, it's nice to know this. It's really nice to know that some of these things that you can add are vegan or organic, or even if they're, you know, processed in some way, it's not like some synthetic, you know, finding agent like PVPP, right? You know, you're actually using stuff that's found in nature, and yes, it's an additive, but you're using it. So when I see stuff like that, it makes me happy. Again, things that I'm probably never going to use in my winemaking, but damn it, at least they're on the up and up about it. You know what I mean? It's good stuff. You know, this is the kind of stuff I love to see. You have all kinds of like biosourced things, vegetable proteins that can be utilized. There's a whole laundry list of like pea proteins. I mean, stuff like that. I mean, they have kind of weird, like, you have veggie must and like veggie flot and veggie coal and like weird branded names. Like, they sound kind of, I guess, I don't know who their marketing is, but those are the names they came up with for these products. So they sound kind of, you know, like, oh, that sounds a little scary. But it's like monosodium glutamate. You hear that and you're like, oh my God, what's that? And you're like, oh, that's just MSG. Like, if you've eaten anything like Asian inspired or just probably fast food in general, you probably consume a lot of MSG. Just saying. So it sounds scary, but when you actually know what it is, you're like, oh, that's not that big of a deal. But it takes actually getting to know some of this stuff. These finding agents I find just absolutely fascinating. I think they're very, very cool. There's been a lot of very cool kind of updates and, you know, products that we can use as finding to help clarify wines, to remove bitterness, remove tannin, help stabilize certain, you know, certain things like pigment and aromatics and things like of that nature. These are things that typically, again, don't scare me, especially when you see that nice, like, hey, oh, this is, you know, a non-allergenic thing. It's vegan. It's made in a responsible way. That's a big, like, thumbs up for me as a winemaker, even though it's not something that I would necessarily use. Now, as you get to the back end of the fining section here, there is a section that is like more traditional fining, where you're talking about icing glass, which is a fish-based, originally it was coming from the bladder of a sturgeon, kind of extracted, but it helps clarify wines. It also helps remove tannin and some bitterness, as I understand, from certain wines. You do have PVPP, which we've mentioned. It's a synthetic fining agent that removes certain phenolic substances like tannins, anthocyanins, and catechins in wine. Sorry, there's a lot of big scientific words here, but them is the ropes. Y'all wanted to get geeky when it came to wine additives, so here we are. We're doing the thing. There's even stuff like silica gels and stuff that can be utilized when it comes to fining. You know, those are a little bit more traditional things that have been used in the past. These first few pages that we've gone through here, that's where I think the cool stuff is. Some of these traditional things, it's kind of nice to move past because realistically, there's better, higher quality products now that do the same work, You know what I mean? It's great to see that. Now, let's talk about some tannin, shall we? We had a whole episode about tannin not that long ago because of some of these seminars that we had been going to. I highly encourage you to go back and listen to it if you're remotely interested in the different phenolics in wine, tannin in particular, and what that does and how it's created, where it comes from, and what that means stylistically as a winemaker when you're extracting, say, skin tannin versus seed tannin, because there is a difference, believe it or not. Chemically, they look the same, but they chain together differently, which allows them to be a little rougher or a little bit softer. Your skin tannins typically being a little bit softer, your seed tannins being a little bit rougher around the edges. You know what I mean? Now you have all kinds of things here that can be utilized to extract more tannin, add more tannin to your wines. This is another realm of things where, quite frankly, it's not that I'm like mad people would use this, but it's not necessarily something that I think is necessarily. If you're looking to create a high tannic wine, there are certain, you know, winemaking techniques and procedures that you can, you know, use to, you know, extract those tannins. I put this in the same realm as the enzymes. You know, these are things that are naturally occurring. They're already there. You know, if you're really trying to manufacture a wine to smell, feel, you know, taste a certain way, then yeah, you're probably going to use some of this stuff. Does it bother me? Not necessarily. Like I said before, and I'm going to sound like this is going to get old. You're probably going to get tired of me saying this, but we'll say it one more time with feeling. Is this stuff that I'd be mad about? Not necessarily. It's kind of like, the use it if you want. Stylistically, go for it if you're having to hit certain tannin levels and objectives, because we can actually measure the amount of tannin that we have in a wine in a lab. This kind of stuff can help doctor some of that up and make sure that you get to where you need to go. Is it necessarily? Absolutely not. Would I use it? Absolutely not. But for certain people, I understand why you do. No harm, no foul. Have at it. All right, now there are all kinds of things for like stabilization. And this is actually an issue that we have had to deal with. We have made wines, some rosé back in the day in particular, and even some of our white wines, where we've had some tartrate instability. And that's when you see those almost like little white crystals, or what we call wine diamonds so lovingly in the industry, sitting at the bottom of a bottle. Now, for the overwhelming majority of people, and I mean the overwhelming majority of people, when they see that, they think the wine's gone bad. I know some of you here listening to this know better. You understand that, hey, it's okay if these are in here. In fact, it actually means less manipulation was utilized in that wine. In fact, there's probably no additional additives or anything in that wine. It's more of a natural winemaking process that's honestly not going to have any impact on the overall quality, the aroma, or the flavor of the wine. But when people see a wine on a grocery store shelf with these little crystals in them, they get bent out of shape. This is one of my biggest pet peeves that I wish that we could get past in the wine industry, is not having to worry about, you know, sediment in our wines, and not just reds, but also in some of our white wines, particularly when it comes to these tartrate crystals, because they're completely like innate. They're not going to do anything to the wine. They're just not going to do anything to the wine. But when it comes to some of these stabilization things, you can use things like gum arabic, which is simply the extract of a sap of an acacia tree. I believe it comes mostly from Africa. But you can use that and mix that into solution in a wine. And it's actually used in cocktail programs to help kind of like fatten up cocktails. It's used in a lot more than just the wine industry. And it's something that can be, you know, very safe to use, not have a lot of issues with any allergies or adverse side effects when using it. It is, again, an extract from the sap of a tree. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to use an additive, I mean, that's probably about as good as you're going to get realistically, right? So, you know, this is one of those things that sometimes winemakers almost have to use. I mean, frankly, using something like that as an example, typically to help remove those tartrates, we would do something called cold stabilization, because typically those tartrates form and fall out of solution. They polymerize when those wines get very, very cold. So when you put them in your freezer, or if they're in like the fridge section of a grocery store, like chilled down, you'll see them start to form. And that's when you can start to have those issues. But you can do that at the winery. But what that means is expending a lot of time and energy keeping a tank that is a large volume very, very cold. Realistically, it's super inefficient. It's a big waste of energy, in my humble opinion, when you can use something like this to kind of circumvent that and not have a huge effect on the flavor, the characteristics, and the quality of the wine all said and done. This is something like this gum arabic that we're talking about. This is something that I, again, no harm, no foul. In fact, something that I would encourage people to use if they're having stability issues in their wine, because it's something that I think is far more beneficial than having to chill down a giant tank using a ton of energy. Just far better. And something that you can do like right before bottling. Like it's very turnkey. Really, really nice, actually. Let's see what else we have going on here. So we are talking about tartaric stabilization. There you go. That's more for acid stabilization. We do have microbial stabilization, you know, making sure that certain things aren't living, breathing, growing in your wine when you don't want them to be. Then you have all kinds of like specific treatments. You can do anything from like carbon filtering and fining in here, which can help remove, you know, pigment from the wine. So you can remove and like lighten up a wine by, you know, using some carbon filtering. You can use, let's see, all kinds of different preservatives. These are actually some of the other products that we use from Lafort. There's one other page, I know I was forgetting something, but when we talk about preservatives, we're talking about sulfites, right? That is the contained sulfite statement on every bottle of wine. And what we use here are their Enosterol 2 and 5 tablets. These are actually like little Alka-Seltzer tablets that you can just plop into a barrel, and it's Enosterol 2 is going to add roughly 2 grams of SO2, and then you're going to, you know, with the 5, you're adding 5 grams of SO2. That converts to, I think it's something like 8 parts per million and 22 parts per million, somewhere in that range, which, you know, in essence, like, it's almost like adding milliliters to that barrel. And if you know how much a milliliter is, it's very, very small. It's a very small volume. You're adding that to a 60-gallon barrel. You're going to have to forgive the transition from like metric to imperial, but winemaking is pretty much all in metric, and we have to do all the conversions in our head. It's why we know a kilogram is 2.21 pounds, and then a gallon contains 3.79 liters. You know, stuff like that you just have off the top of your head. Really nice to have. And then from there, you have all kinds of other random stuff. Everything from filtering, you get back here to the very back of the catalog, and that's where you get into some of the different oak adjuncts, we like to call them, where you have chips, staves, blocks, you know, sawdust, all kinds of stuff that you can use in your wine, where instead of buying a $1,300 oak barrel, you can spend, you know, a couple $100 and flavor your wine as see fit. Many of those oak chips, sawdust, and other oak adjuncts, we call them, are treated a certain way to exude certain characteristics. If you're wanting more caramel or vanilla or chocolate or mocha or whatever kind of characteristics, you can dial in the exact kind of flavors you want to add. If you're curious how a grocery store wine for like, you know, $15.99 has such great oaky flavor, that's the stuff they're using. They're not using oak barrels. Sorry to burst your bubble. But even big productions or even high-end wines in some situations will use some of this stuff because they're trying to keep costs down. Because imagine if you have a 10,000 barrel cellar and you have, you know, some of your higher-end wines going into new oak, but you're pretty much bulking out a lot of stuff just to make, you know, stuff for the grocery store, for Costco, whatever the case may be. You're going to want to do that as cheaply and affordably as possible to hit a certain price point. And if you're buying a brand new French oak barrel, that's immediately going to add about $5 in cost to your wine. So if you're trying to hit $10.99, it's going to be really tough to do that if you're spending so much money on just one piece of that puzzle. So you have to cut costs. That's where a lot of those different oak additives and things kind of come into play. I hope that that whirlwind explanation of this catalog here is helpful, and that going through it maybe created some interest or intrigue into what actually goes into wines that we make. Of the things that we've utilized in our winemaking, we're very, very open about this. This is why we have a webpage on our own website called Wine by the Numbers. If you want to know exactly what goes into wine, into our wines, you want to know a little bit of the chemistry behind our wines, we give you all that information. We tell you, hey, in 2022, we had a huge problem with the pH levels in our wines. They were super, super high, which means that, you know, they're at risk of spoiling and having all kinds of problems and issues. High VA, which is volatile acidity, and turning to vinegar, in essence. Can we fix that? Absolutely, we can. And what we did was we added 1.25 grams per liter of tartaric acid. Tartaric acid being one of the three major acid groups that are naturally occurring in grapes. And we had to do it because it was like, hey, we either spend tens of thousands of dollars on grapes and maybe those wines spoil and we go out of business, or we ensure that they're stable. It's the one and only time I've ever had to add tartaric acid. And we only did it to our Cabernet Sauvignon in 2022. But them is the ropes. Sometimes you just have to do what you have to do. And again, like actually many of the products that are in this catalog we went through, they're things that I'm not necessarily mad about. They're not something that I'm gonna turn my nose up at. A lot of them are stylistic considerations. A lot of them, like the tartaric acid that I just mentioned, are a stability consideration and ensuring that you can actually make a good wine versus having something spoil and have all kinds of issues and be out tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars and literally go out of business. I think for many of us in the industry, you know, gun to our head, if it was using one of these things in this catalog or going out of business, we'd probably try using one of these things out of this catalog as long as it's within reason and doesn't really go against, you know, what we stand for in this wine industry. You know, when we talk about things like PVPP, when we talk about things like dimethyl dicarbonate, those are things that I am just against using. You're talking about synthetic products, dimethyl dicarbonate in particular, one that is incredibly toxic. It's been used in the beverage industry as a whole. Not just in wine, but in a lot of different things since I think 87 or 88. So it's been around for a long time. But if you have to wear a hazmat suit to put it in your wine, I'm not going to use it, put it that way. But I will, I've talked about that particular substance before on the show. You can go back to any one of the additive episodes, particularly the first one from last year. That would be March or I think April of 2023. We did that episode and we dove into that in a little bit more detail. So I recommend checking that out as well. Long story longer. You know, we saw there's, you know, 100 pages of different things in this catalog that we can use. You know, there are basically three pages we pay attention to in terms of yeast, some of the nutrients, and then some of the sulfite, you know, tablets that we utilize, and the tartaric acid. So call it four things that we have used in 15 years. And the tartaric acid was only for one wine, 1 year. Outside of that, we try and just keep it honest. And we also try and tell you exactly what's going into our wines, because again, this is my soapbox. This is something that I think wineries need to be doing more of. They need to be sharing what actually goes into their wines. They need to be okay with sharing with what goes into their wines, because realistically, there's not a lot to hide. There's not a lot of skeletons in this closet. It's just an empty closet that is frankly far less scary than many of you probably expect. Again, many of the things, and I'm going to say it one last time with feeling to try and get the point across, because we do talk so much about these additives and not using them and talking a big game of trying to make, you know, as honest of a wine as we can, which is something that I still will do for myself. And I know many others jump on that bandwagon. But there are a lot of the items in this catalog that don't scare me, and they shouldn't scare you either, because a lot of them are naturally occurring. A lot of them are coming from natural plant material. They're vegan. They're already, you know, established in and around vineyards, such as some of the yeasts that we utilize. A lot of this stuff is not an issue. There are a handful of things in terms of some of the extracts and concentrates, you know, and synthetic agents that are, I think, truly the problem. But also, when you're throwing this handbook at a wine, it means you're manufacturing a wine. right? You're not a winemaker, you're a wine manufacturer. And I think there is a big distinction to be made there. I don't think that it means you can look down on one person or the other, because it's a stylistic consideration. It's something that, again, doesn't necessarily bother me. What does bother me, however, is when people are unwilling to talk about this stuff and explain to you, the consumer, what is actually in that wine and why it tastes, smells, and is the way it is. Because this, I think this stuff is fascinating. I think many other people are going to find it fascinating and, frankly, very helpful to explain why you enjoy certain wines or maybe why you don't enjoy others. So that's my soapbox. I'll leave it at that. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I hope this got the kind of, you know, the thought process really moving, especially as we're looking at harvest right down the line. It is just a few weeks away. For more information on some of these items, if you really want to like dive in and see what some of these are all about, go check out Lafort's website. Their company name is spelled LAFFORT. You just do Lafort wine in your Google search. It'll come up and you'll be able to look at all the products that they have available. You can also look at places like Scott Labs and Lalvin. That's Lalvin. There's all kinds of people that put stuff like this together for winemakers. It's not just them. There are a ton of companies doing this kind of research, utilizing some of this technology and providing these substances for winemakers to create this. A lot of it's very fascinating. It's cutting edge, very cool stuff. But there are those of us that say like, that's nice. We're still not going to use it. All right. We'll catch you later. Thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to like, share, subscribe to the show. Follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines. Be sure to submit your questions for our monthly Q&A at the end of the month. You can go to our website, mtgawines.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage. That's where you'll see that email form to submit questions, or you can just slide into our DMs or the comments section of any episode, and we will take it from there. Have an excellent rest of the day, week, weekend, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.